Well, I only sent one, so...
No, I thought last week's did. I don't know why.
It didn't come through me. Sorry.
Okay.
So, we are in Perek Chaf Bet in Shmuel Aleph, chapter 22. And David went to Nov in chapter 21. He got help in Nov. He got food. He got a weapon. It was not clear whether he inquired of the Urim Betumim, the Council of God, via Achimelech or not. That's something we're going to revisit in this chapter. And having left Nov, David gets counsel from God. And God tells him that he should go to the land of Yehuda. Specifically, he should go to a place where there will be people who know him, who know his family, and they'll help him. And we did say at the end last time that this is going to cause Shaul to find out that David has allies and that he is a growing threat, and that is going to lead to the demolition of Nov. And we asked, how in the world are we supposed to understand Hashem setting that up via God's message? So we have a few answers. One answer is this was going to happen anyway. David was going to leave Mitsuda at some point, or Doeg was going to volunteer his information about Nov at some point. And so what David does here doesn't really move things that much. That's one answer. Another answer, Shaul has free will, and God isn't going to prevent this from happening. Another answer, Hashem values reassuring David. By sending David God, we had said that Hashem is actually reassuring David, that Hashem is still thinking about him and with him. But I think the biggest answer is that this is part of the curse of Eli, that Nov is in fact going to have to be destroyed because of what happened in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, and that's what's happening at this point. Hashem is destroying the city of Nov. So that brings us to Psukim Vav Techet, sentences 6 to 8, which we read it last time briefly because you had to in order to understand how God's counsel led to what happened to Nov. But now let's read it and try to understand the Psukim ourselves. We are going to see Shaul overwrought, angry, upset, and then we're going to see Doeg use the opportunity to say what he says about Achimelech in Nov. So chapter 22, sentence 6. Okay, we're all on the same page? Good. Vayishma Shaul ki noda David va'anashim asher ito. Shaul heard ki noda David va'anashim asher ito. That's a very hard phrase to translate. Let me actually ask you, who has a translation here? Susan, what does the pink book have?
It says, and Saul heard that David and the men who were with them had become known.
Ah.
Saul was sitting...
That's perfect. That's perfect. That David and the men with him had become known. So that could sort of fit with Radak. It sounds a little bit more like a Barbanel, quite honestly. If you take a look at source number 3 on your source sheet, Abarbanel says, Siper, it reported here, Sheshama Shaul kino David is parsem David le'oyevo. Shaul heard that David had become known and publicized as a threat, as his enemy. Visha asatz mosar v'gadol, and that he had made himself a noble, a leader, be'osfo elav ha'anashim shezachar, by gathering him to the men, as mentioned here. So they're becoming known as an opponent to Shaul. I shouldn't have written noble as a translation for sar, but it really isn't a good term for it. Officer doesn't really carry the weight. But the idea is that David is becoming known as a threat. His men are becoming known as a threat. Other translations. Someone here have an art scroll? Etty, which translation do you have? You're muted. I don't hear you.
Sorry. Mine says Jewish Bible according to the Masoretic text.
Yeah, that doesn't tell me who it is. But that's okay. Give me the translation, please.
Mine says that David was discovered.
David and his men were discovered.
Yeah.
Okay. Sandy, you were going to read from yours?
But I have a question.
Okay, but I'm not up to questions. Right now I'm doing this. Hang in there. Hang in there on questions. Sandy, what's the translation?
I have the Stone Chumash, yeah. And it says that David and his men with him had been discovered.
Okay, David Nisman with him had been discovered. So that's not giving us a lot of nuance here. So let me just show you the other two approaches, and then I'll come back to Eddie's question. If you look on the sheet at source number one, Noda David, if you see the way I translated it there, I'm keeping with Rashi. The Rashi reads Noda David as David had become aware, not had become known. Why? Because Rashi says, ki hisbonei hishamer mimenu. The fact that David thought of ways to be safe from Shaul, meaning the fact that David left Mitzudah to go somewhere else, and we said that God is telling him you have to move because you have to stay one step ahead of Shaul, suggests that what's going on is God notified that he has to move. Shaul said, how did he know? And that's what Shaul is concerned about. A third idea is in Radak, in source number two. Kinis parsein David. David had become known. Klomar, meaning, noda davar shahayu imo anashim ad sheshama Shaul. It became known that he had men with him, that he wasn't on his own. So three different things could have become known. It could be the, like Rashi says, it's that David knows about the threat. It could be, as Radak says, it becomes known that David is gaining allies, which I guess is the closest to some of the translations that I was hearing here. Or you have a Bar Benel who says that it's David is becoming known as an opponent, as a potential threat to Shaul. A lot of this may come down to how I translate the word ki in the sentence. The noda ki. Or ki noda David, I should say. But that's something for another time. But the point is, you can really take this three different ways. Bottom line, Shaul is scared. Eti, you were going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say about the Bar Benel number three.
Yeah.
It's translated that David has become known as his enemy, and I am not seeing it that way in Hebrew. It says. In Hebrew, I see that it says that David became known and publicized to his enemy.
Where do you see that? Where do you see that in the Hebrew?
The Plishtim and with whoever he was with.
Where do you see that in the Psukim? I don't see that anywhere in the text. You're talking about my translation of a Bar Benel. I didn't realize what you meant. No, if that were true, then it would be le oivo, as a Bar Benel is using it, is le oyev lo, to be an enemy to him. That's what a Bar Benel means. That seems fairly clear in a Bar Benel.
Okay.
So Shaul hears this, and especially within Radak, that he hears that David is amassing people, which I think has a lot of logic to it. I think it's a little hard to read that because of the words va'anashim asher ito. It sounds like the people with him are becoming known also. So that's difficult. Ricky, I need you to wait. The anashim asher ito, I think makes it hard to read it as Radak does. But however you read it, Shaul perceives that David is becoming known and that David is becoming a threat. V'Shaul yoshev ba'giv'ah tachas ha'eshel barama. Shaul is dwelling in Giv'ah, his home area in Binyamin, underneath the eshel. We have to talk about what an eshel is, in Ramah. And he's got a spear, v'chaniso biado, the ever-present spear that never leaves Shaul's side. V'chol avadav nitzavim alav, and he has all of his staff with him, Shaul does. He's got everybody there gathered with him. Yes, Ricky?
I was just going to say that I like the way it says, v'chaniso biado, it's so poetic.
Yes. But it's also a reminder. The chanit is always with Shaul. We've seen this chanit with him. We saw it in chapter 18. We saw it in chapter 19. We saw it in chapter 20. The only reason we didn't see it in chapter 21 is because Shaul didn't have a role to play in chapter 21. 21 was all David and Nov. Shaul didn't show up. But it feels like whenever we see Shaul, we see that spear. Yes, Janine?
Yeah,
Shaul heard because, not that, but because, according to Radak.
But then what is it that he heard? It doesn't say.
That the, because the people were becoming, that because David and the people with him were becoming known, and that's why Shaul heard.
Heard what?
They were becoming, that he's, that there's a gang, that there's a group of people, David and a group
but
of
it doesn't,
people.
But it doesn't fit. In other words, it says, and Shaul heard because David and the men with him were becoming known.
Well,
and Shaul was sitting in Gibeah.
He heard the talk because they were becoming known. In other words, he was
I don't know. I'm not sold. I'm not sold. The only way I could read it like what you're saying is if you're telling me that Shaul heard that David had come to Ya'ar Cheret. But that doesn't seem to fit the story. Leona, you're muted.
Okay, sorry. I'm a little confused. I'm not that much of a grammarian, but the Noda looks to me kind of... Oh, I disappeared.
That's okay. We see
you. Looks to me kind of... I don't know. I can't function in this thing anymore. It's kind of a Nephal. Is that true?
So, yes. Yes.
And a Nephal is something that is caused to you rather than actively doing the causing.
Also true.
Passive voice.
True.
And my question is this, I don't remember any section prior to this where Shaul was really aware that David had been notified that he was on the hunt to kill him.
So the answer.
Somehow, I feel that Shaul, at this point now, thinks that David somehow has become aware that he has been notified of the fact that Shaul was out to get him and has now accumulated a group.
Yeah. The thing is that no, Shaul knew. Shaul knew ages ago because.
How did he know?
I'm going to tell you because in chapter 18. He tried to stab, chapter 19, chapter 18 he also tried it, but chapter 19 he tried to stab David, and David ran away, and then he surrounded the house to try to get him back, and David disappeared out the window and left this mannequin in the bed, and then in the next chapter, the meal for Rosh Chodesh, Shaul is angry because David is absent and he realizes it's because David fled and he yells at Yonatan and he says, you chose him over me. Now, Shaul knows that David is aware. What he didn't know was that David was now gaining people, gaining allies. That is the novelty one way or another. However I read this phrase, but he knows already for a while that David is well aware and that's why David is no longer in the palace. So take a look at sentence 6, please, a little more closely. Tell me where Shaul is living.
Gibeah.
Are you sure?
Is Ramah?
Yeah. Is he in Gibeah or is he in Ramah? Who lives in Ramah?
Shmuel
lives in Ramah. Shmuel Haramati, right? Shmuel is from Ramah. That is where his home is. Uchuvaso lebeso. Shmuel always goes back to his house in Ramah. Gibeah is Shaul's home. So we need to understand what a sentence means when it says Shaul was sitting in or living in Gibeah under the Eshel in Ramah. But before we do that, I want to tackle a different word in this sentence. Sandy, if your question is based on your translation, I'm going to ask you to hold off. Is it? Okay. So before we tackle the word Ramah, I want to take a look first at the word Eshel, because the word Eshel is also important and it colors the way we read the sentence. In order to understand this, you have to look at the pasuk in Bereishis, chapter 21, sentence 33. It's source number 4 on the sheet. Okay. This goes back to the time of Abraham. So, way, way back in the Chumash.
you said Midosila.
Yes. So in this pasuk, we're talking about when Avraham had gone to live in Be'er Sheva, and he made a deal with Abimelech and Pichol and all of that. And after they make their covenant, the pasuk says, "Vayita Eshel Be'er Sheva." David did something in Be'er Sheva, and there, Vayikrasham B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam, he called out in the name of Hashem, Eternal God. So the problem is the word Vayita Eshel. Vayita means and he planted. But the word Eshel is a rare word in Tanakh. It shows up there. It shows up there. And then it shows up here in our story. But what exactly is an Eshel? So take a look at source number 5 on your sheet, please. It's a Gemara in Sota. Vayita Eshel Biv'er Shava. Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish said, Melamed Sha'asa Pardes, V'nata Bokol Minei Megadim. He made an orchard, and he planted all kinds of delicacies in the orchard. Vayita, he planted. Eshel must mean an orchard. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah then have a debate about this. Chad Amar Pardes, one said it was an orchard. The Chad Amar Pundak, and the other one says it was an inn. Bishlam Alamanda Amar Pardes, the Gemara says, I understand the view that says it was a Pardes, an orchard. Hainu Dichsiv Vayita, and he planted. What do we plant? We plant trees. Elamanda Amar Pundak, my Vayita, but if you take the word Pundak, then how do you understand, and he planted? You can't plant an inn, it isn't gonna grow. To which he answers, yeah, but you can use the word and he planted to mean more than just planting trees, much like in English. It can be used more broadly. Kidichsiv, he quotes your pasuk in Daniel, Vayita Ohalei Apodno, he planted the tents of his palace. So what it means is planting a structure, and it means specifically an inn. Chana, I'm going to ask you to hold off, please. Rakshniya Vagasha, Ajni Gumer Tagamara. So right now I have a debate as to what an eshel is. Either the eshel is an orchard, or the eshel is an inn. But then the pasuk continued to say, Vayikrasham b'shem kel olam. He called out there in the name of the living God, the eternal God, God master of the universe, however you wish to translate kel olam. Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, I want to know what it was that Avram was calling out, whether this is an orchard, which Reish Lakish thinks it is, or whether it's an inn. What exactly was this? So Amar Reish Lakish al tikri vayikra ela vayakri. Don't read it as, and he called, but rather, he caused others to call. He's not changing the text in the Chumash. Don't get excited. What he's saying is that you can read another layer of meaning here, of Vayakri. How so? Malamed shehikri Avram Avinu lishmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'fek kol over b'shav. Avram caused all the passers-by to call out in the name of Hashem. Ketzad, how so? La'achar sha'achlu v'shasu, after they ate and drank, amdu levarcho, they stood up to bless Abraham, to thank him for the food. Amar lehem v'chi mishali achaltem. He said, what, you ate my food? It wasn't my food. Mishal okei olam achaltem. You ate the food of the God of the world. Hodu v'shabchu uberchu l'misha amar v'haya ha'olam. He says, you should be thanking Hashem who spoke and the world came into existence. So the way they read the pasuk is that Avraham either put in an orchard or he put in an inn and he supported people and had them thank Hashem for it. And of course we have the Medrash on this that's not part of this Gemara, but we have the Medrash on this that says that Eshel is actually to be read, this odd word is to be read as an acronym. Achila is the first letter. Aleph is Achila is eating. Shesia, the second letter, Shin. Shesia is drinking. And then the Lamed, is there are two different approaches. One is that it's Lina, a place to stay. which is better if it's an in. The other is that it's Leviya, escorting them on their way, which makes it better if it's an orchard. The depending on which explanation you take may determine whether this is understood to be a Lina or Leviya. But in any case, the point for us on this Eshel is we have two different schools of thought as to whether it is a tree or whether it is an inn. Chana, thank you for waiting. What were you going to say? Oh, okay.
And also for Vayita, it's like Vayet Olo.
Right, so...
It's close, so it's, yeah.
Right. So the reason I didn't bring Vayet, I didn't mention Vayet Ohalo is because the ayin isn't there. And I think that's why the Gemara chose instead the pasuk in Daniel. Because there you have the ayin, which is stronger as a connection. The ayin is certainly part of the root. Yes, Effie.
I think that Eshel rather is just a tree. A particular tree, because it says he's sitting under the tree.
Well, you're in Shmuel. It didn't say that in Bereshit, where this Gemara is talking.
The Bereshit, they said he planted an Eshel, which is a tree.
Okay. I
just Googled the translation, and it means tamarisk.
Okay.
I'm
going to come back to the reason why the Gemara goes the way it goes. We're going to analyze this Gemara. We're not leaving it where it is. We're just on the starting level here. Claudette.
Yeah, my translation, my Tanakh.
I'm not interested in translations. Sorry. No translations right now. No translations right now. Thanks. The same thing that I said to Sandy before. I'm not working with the translations right now. Yes, Janine.
I just wanted to say, when it says he sat under the Eshel, in those days an inn was not a holiday inn. It was probably tents, and you could sit under a tent. So even if it's tent, it could still...
I hear. It's a little of a stretch. It's a little of a stretch, though, no?
I guess so, but you're under a tent.
But usually we talk about sitting... Usually we talk about sitting in a tent, not under a tent. Usually.
I don't know what those Bedouin tents look like. Do they have walls?
No, but usually we say Besocha Ohel. Or Ba'ohel, like in the case of Sarah. So I see your hand, Ricky, but I want to go through this Gemara, because everyone is wanting to jump ahead, and I want to explain this Gemara. So... In terms of evidence that it's a tree, number one, the word vayita certainly does incline us towards tree, as the Gemara itself said. And it's true, the usage in Shmuel sounds like a tree. And not only that, sitting under, as we noted, but not only that, there will be one other use of the word eshel. If you jump ahead to chapter 31, sentence 13, the end of Shmuel Aleph, you see it? Chapter 31, sentence 13. That's when they bury Shaul.
Yeah, Tachat Eshel.
Exactly, Tachat Eshel. So that really doesn't sound like it's in a tent. It sounds like it's under a tree. So I think there's ample grounds to say, as Effie wanted to say, that it's a tree, and then you can go off into your translations. It sounds like Sandy and Claudette, Claudette and I forget who else said it, tamarisk, that's a fine type of a translation for it as a tree. However, the Gemara insists on offering this drasha, that it is an inn. And I think that there are a few reasons why. Number one, why are we mentioning a random tree planting? Is this the only time Avram planted a tree? Like, Avram presumably plants things at other times. We're suddenly throwing in this mention about planting a tree. It's strange. As opposed to he builds an inn, that's a little more significant. That's number one. Number two, the text goes from planting it to, and he called out in the name of God. Tell me something. If this was a tree, he planted a tree and he called in the name of God, what would that sound like to you?
Avodah Zarah.
Avodah Zarah, idolatry, right? The Asherah. Over and over again, we're told in Chumash and in Navi, I see you, Ora. We're told that there is a type of tree worship or tree-related worship. That's what this would look like if he plants a tree and calls out in the name of God. So that's the second thing.
I didn't get that, a tree in the name of God.
The text says that he planted a tree and he called out in the name of God. Calling out of the name of God with trees is the province of idolatry in Tanakh. It's called Asherah. So much so that the Torah actually says, don't plant trees near your altars because of that. So it would be very strange to have the text saying he planted a tree and he called out of the name of God. That's a second reason. And then third, I see you, Susan. And then third, remember something that we've said in other contexts. Going back to Parshas Chayei Sarah, Abraham is on a campaign to make the south of Israel Jewish. He succeeded in the area near Hebron, and then he moves down to the area of Beersheba and Grar, and he's trying to develop that area. So it would make a lot of sense if we say that he builds an inn. You can still say it's an orchard, and it's Pardes, and he's giving people food there and getting them to make brachot. But making it an inn is a little bit stronger. So maybe that's part of it also. But my primary reasons for saying this are really the Asherah issue. And why am I mentioning a random tree planting? It just seems very strange. Okay. All right, you were going to say?
In terms of the significance and why is it a big deal, didn't we also see Devorah sitting under a tree?
We did, but that was a different tree. That was a tamar.
But meaning, like, in terms of, like, is it significant? We've seen it mentioned other places where people are sitting under trees. In terms of why is that significant? I don't know. We've seen it other places, too.
So that's funny, because when we learned that passage in Shoftim, we actually said there that it was strange, too. Because the Gemara says the Tomer Dvora is a specific kind of tree. I see you, Etty, but listen to what I got first. The Tomer Devorah is specific. She's sitting under a date palm because the date palm, unlike standard trees, has no branches that branch out in different directions. It grows tall and straight. And the image is supposed to be that the Jews don't branch out. We are loyal to Hashem. We have one heart towards God. So the Gemara does the same thing there, trying to draw a drasha from the fact that we mentioned the tree. And it gives another drasha, and it says, is that she sat under the tree because she wanted to be outdoors, because otherwise men would come to her for judgment, and she would be indoors, and that would be improper. There's because of isolation and seclusion issues. So, like, we could do analyze when it mentions the tree out of nowhere, and we do say there must be something going on here. Okay. Susan.
When I read about the tree, I thought very differently when you said with Abraham. Because if we think of Abraham, even when everybody does sacrifice, like when Abraham, instead of sacrificing Yitzchak, he made a mistake and sacrificed an animal. And again, it's not everlasting. However, a tree is there forever. So that when I look at it, and you said he called out, you know, a name of the God, it's sort of like when you see this, you're going to see it all the time, or this type of tree even, and you're going to think of Hashem and because people have, like, especially with, you know, acknowledged, honored Hashem. And I think he's sitting under the angel. The tree is also, the tree represents long lasting. It failed for centuries.
It's an interesting idea. It's funny because I would have totally argued the opposite, that you build some building out of stone and it'll last longer than the tree.
But it doesn't. They have trees that are, I don't know how many centuries old they still have.
Trees that are centuries old are a lot rarer than buildings that are centuries old.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry. In our age and with our environmental concerns, I'd like to say differently, but I think it's true. Ricky.
How common
common is it for Russia to take a word and make it into a Rashi Tevot?
So the Rashi Tevot is really, the Rashi Tevot is really not the main thing that they're doing. The Gemara doesn't bring the Rashi Tevot. The Drasha itself is just to say, I think an Eshel is actually an in. And then the acronym idea is a nice added point, but it's not the essence. If all you had was that, the Gemara wouldn't be using it. Claudette, you had brought the translation before, but did you have anything else that you wanted to say on it? Or you just wanted to tell me the time, kind of tree? You're muted, I can't hear you.
My translation says tamarack tree, but then if I go down further, Shaul is talking about trees, whether the Benjamin eyes will get any vineyards or anything like that.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
Sitting underneath a tree, uh-huh. Talking about it.
That's clever. That's clever. I hadn't thought about making that connection. Okay. Yes, Sandy. Sandy first.
I'm picking up on what Ora said.
Etty, hang in there. I'm waiting on Sandy. She's been waiting a long time.
It's okay. I just want to mention that it's interesting to me that in my translation, it doesn't mention the word Ramah at all.
Okay, so I'm not getting to... Right, so that's the translation part that I wanted to ward off. We're still not there. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
We're not there yet. Yes, Etty.
Sorry.
Me?
Yes. I was picking up on what Ora said, that it is significant that this person was sitting under a tree and that person was sitting under a tree. And I was going to say that it's hot in Israel and the sun is strong, so they're seeking shelter under the tree.
Right, but that's one of the reasons that we gave for why we said that that date tree is not just a date tree. It must be a symbol. Because if you want shelter, you don't go under a date tree. Date trees are very poor shelter. It's not helping you. Leona, and then we're going to go further here. Yes.
Okay, I mean, this is just as an aside. I looked up tamarisk tree, which is the exact translation that's given in my, in two of my sources. And a tamarisk tree is what, it's more of a large shrub with many, many branches and little pink flowers that come on it. And I don't know why, just the visual image of that kind of made me think of what the Torah is, that is this a precursor in some way of how we regard the Torah? It's a crazy thing.
It's a nice idea. It's a nice idea. So now that we've dealt with the word Eshel, and we've noted that you can take it as a tree in Breishit, or you could take it as an inn in Breishit, commentators in Shmuel all assume it's a tree. Because the reasons with Avraham for saying it's not a tree don't apply here. You know, the issue of why mention the random tree planting is not part of our discussion. We're saying Shaul is sitting under a tree and he's got his servants around him. We're painting a picture. And there's no issue of calling out in the name of God. Like, that's not part of this scene. Now let's approach the word Rama. Okay. So if I go with the literal read of Eshel, right? And I say, I want a literal read of the word Rama. My answer for Rama is going to be what Sandy's translation does, which is translate it not as a place name, the town of Rama, but rather as an elevated area, a height. That's all that a Rama is. It's an elevated area in Giv'ah. So if you look at your sheet at source number, you know, I didn't even bring it because it's relatively straightforward. It's not there. But Rashi says it and Radak says it. It just means an elevated area in Giv'ah. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. I see your hand, Hana. I think there's a lot to be said for that. Because I think it connotes a sense of fear and siege. In other words, Shaul knows that David is amassing men. Shaul is going to use the term ambush, orev, for David multiple times. Shaul goes to a high spot in Giv'ah from which he has a view so that he is able to protect himself. You follow? That's what I see on one level. However, take a look now at source number 6, the Gemara in Tanis. The Gemara gives us another view. V'chima'iyin Giva Eitzel Rama. The Gemara asks my question, why are you mentioning Giva next to Rama? Either he's in Giva or he's in Rama. Ela lomar lach, to teach you, mi garam l'Sha'ul she'yashav v'giv'a shtei shanim u'mechza. Who caused Sha'ul to live, to dwell, to survive in Giv'a for 2.5 years? Meaning, Sha'ul's supposed to be gone. Sha'ul's supposed to be off the throne. Who was it who enabled Sha'ul's empire to last as long as it did? Tfila so shall Shmuel haramasi. The tfila of Shmuel of Rama. In other words, reading this as a non-literal Eshel, not as a, well, reading Rama first, as a reference not to a height, but as a reference to Shmuel. And now what we're saying is Sha'ul survives because of the great Eshel in Rama. That's sort of a midrashic read of Eshel, not a literal tree. So you have two ways to read this sentence. That's what I'm trying to show you. It's giving us one read. It's a tree. It's on a height. Sha'ul is scared. The other read, it is a shelter. It is the shelter of Rama, which is Shmuel, who is protecting Sha'ul. Those are the two paths that I wanted to show you in this. I did not envision that taking 37 minutes. So it goes. Okay. But that's what I thought. Chana, you were going to say? No? Okay. Susan.
It says in my translation, if I may, it says that Rashi says that this was a hill in Gilboa, not to be confused with Samuel's Ramah, which was situated in Mount Ephraim.
That's exactly what I just said, right? Okay. The elevated area in Giva.
Giva.
The elevated area in Giva. That's correct. That is the literal read. What you are reading from there is the literal read. That's the idea. So you have two ways to take that. Sha'ul hears this. Sha'ul is scared. And look how he responds. Pasuk Zayin, sentence 7. Vayomer Sha'ul la'avadav hanitzavim alav. Sha'ul says to his servants, who are all standing over him, Shim'una b'nei yemini. Listen up, you people of Binyamin, of Benjamin. That's his tribe. Gam l'chulchem yitein ben Yishai sados u'chramim. What, you all think that David, this ben Yishai, you think he's going to give you fields and vineyards? L'chulchem yasim sarei alafim b'sarei meos. You think he's going to give you guys positions as leaders? Is that what you have in mind? Ki k'shartem kulchem alai, such that you're all in a conspiracy against me. Ve'ein gole'es ozni, and nobody said a word to me. Nobody opened my ear. Bichros b'ni and ben Yishai, when my son cast to covenant with the son of Yishai. My son allied himself with David. None of you had anything to say. Ve'ein cholemi kemalai, and none of you are in pain because of me. None of you are worried because of my fate. V'gole'es ozni, and none of you are saying anything to me. That my son has taken my servant and set him up as a threat to me, orev, an ambush to me, like this very day. Take a look at Radak. Radak picks up on the fact that he calls them Bnei Yemini, Benjaminites. Klomar aleichem haya lachush alai. You should have been concerned for me. You're my blood. You're my tribe. You're my family. Why in the world is no one me anything? Says Radak. The simple read of this sentence is, you're expecting wealth from him. That causes you to abandon your Shevet. Abarbanel reads it as mockery. Take a look at source number 8. He says, Imatem o'avim es David, if you love David, u'ma'alimim es inyanav mimani, and you hide his affairs from me, b'choshvechem she'yaseimachem chesed kasher yimloch, thinking that he is going to do some kind of chesed when he becomes king, he's going to help you, emisadosu kramim, he's going to give you fields and vineyards, omi sararabe kavod, or he'll give you power and honor, shiestim eschem sarei alafim esarei meyos, he's going to make you leaders of thousands, leaders of hundreds. Hinei be'emes sichlu zelachem. This is foolishness. Ki hu lo yitein zelachem, he's not going to give that to you. Ki me'ayim lo kol kach sadosu kramim, where's he getting fields and vineyards? Now, I should note, some commentators on this point to the fact that when Shmuel gave the warning about what kings can do, he specifically said kings are able to confiscate fields and vineyards and give them to others. So, yeah, the answer could be, actually, we expect he will do that. But the simple read of the sentence is, you're putting your hopes in something that isn't going to help you. Malbim, a little deeper, says, why do you think he's going to give it to you? You're from Binyamin. Why would he have any interest in giving you anything? He's going to give everything to his people, not to you. So he accuses them of helping David. He accuses them of hiding what Yonasan has been doing. Two reads of this reference to Yonasan and David. The simple read, you concealed my son's pact with the son of Yishai. Right? You conceal the pact of Ben Yishai with Bini, my son. Which is something he's done a lot with David, calling David Ben Yishai versus Yonah's son being Bini. But take a look at Abarbanel in source number 9. He has a little bit of a different read. This requires some Hebrew reading. You might want to go back to the sentence actually first. In sentence 8. He said, Bichros Bini Im Ben Yishai. We translated that as when my son made a deal with Ben Yishai. But Abarbanel in source number 9 says, Ubet Bichros, the bet of Bichros, he bet hasiba. It indicates cause. Like Vayavod Yisrael Beisha. Yaakov worked because of a woman. Nachesh Yenachesh Bo. He is able to engage in sorcery because of it. These are pasuk that. These are psukim that are in the Hebrew, not in my English translation. Rotzel amar, meaning, ba'avur habris asher karas bini im ben Yishai, because of the covenant my son made with the son of Jesse. In other words, it's not you are hiding the fact that my son made such a covenant. You are hiding this information because my son made a pact with the son of Yishai. You're siding with him and you feel justified because my son has cast his lot with him. And none of you are in pain because of me. None of you are worried about me. And then he throws in a second reference to what happened with David and Yonasan. He says, Ki kim b'nias avdi alayla orev, my son has made my servant into a threat to me. Why the second reference to Yonasan and David? Why does he do that? So the simple read is that Shaul is distraught, and he's repeating himself. The same way that he repeated the phrase, Ein goles ozni, no one is going to open my ear, no one is going to tell me anything. That's the simple read. Like he used the word kulchem 3 times, Rabbi Zach points out, he says, all of you, all of you, all of you, 3 times in this sentence. He used it in sentence 7. Is Ben Yishai going to give all of you? He used it again in the beginning of sentence 8. Kushartem kulchem alai. All of you made a conspiracy against me. And he uses it in the middle, in the end of sentence 7. Is he going to give all of you positions as leaders? Lekulchem yasim. So Shaul is just distraught, overwrought, and he's repeating himself. That's one way to read it. Sandy.
Chance to still stick with him, even though, so that they trust him, and then it's not just like help me, but then he's going to kill them. In other words, the same way that I love my son, so that's why I mentioned the son, to sort of make it that he's strayed, and so I sort of forgive you if you strayed, but help me now.
So I love that idea. The only problem is that in chapter 20 he tried to kill Yonah's son, so I'm not sure that would inspire confidence. I'll treat you just like my son. Yes, Agnes and then Susan.
How did Shaul find out about the
Right, so I have to think he means here the original Brit, which he was actually present for. I don't think he can mean the one that was in chapter 20. I don't see any way for him to have found out about that one. I would agree with that. Susan?
I think when you describe Shaul as repetitive and being befuddled, it's the character, because I was wondering, he sounded so normal to me, but we've already discussed how he was losing it. And
yeah.
Suddenly, how did he get it again?
Right.
But when I heard what you, it makes sense, because we'd already discussed way back when David was playing the music and whatever, Shaul was depressed and losing it, he wasn't so coherent and all of this. And suddenly, if you take this at face value, he sounds pretty good.
Right. I mean, it depends a little bit on the question we never resolve of whether ruach ra'ah is a constant state or whether it comes and goes. Right? That'll determine how I read this.
But we also, he just never was the same Shaul.
Right. But not being the same Shaul wouldn't be the same thing as being, you know, unable to string a coherent sentence together. I mean,
but the other explanation,
yeah.
It really fits.
Right. I think it does fit. I think you also could suggest two other things. One is that there is one point he adds, the second time he references David, and that is him being an orev, him being a threat to him. He's going to lie in ambush for me. There's an irony to that claim, because David will have two opportunities to ambush him, one in chapter 24 and one in chapter 26, and he isn't going to do it either time. But Shaul accuses him of, you know, setting that up. That's number two. And then number three, Abarbanel. Abarbanel has a different read of the sentence, which I know will shock you. It's very sharp. He says, go back and look at sentence 8 more carefully. He says, you have created a conspiracy. All of you have created a conspiracy against me. No one tells me anything about my son making a deal with the son of Yishai. None of you are sick because of me and opening my ears. End of quote, says Abarbanel. The last words in the sentence are Shaul talking to himself and saying to himself, that's it. They're all in conspiracy because my son cast his lot with David. You follow? That's the way that Abarbanel reads it. They're doing this because my son made a pact with David. I thought that was a brilliant read from Abarbanel. Probably not pshat, but brilliant anyway. Okay. However you read that, whether you caught the ins and outs of that or not, the main things that come from these last few sentences are the two ways to read Eshel and Rama. Is it a tree and he's on a height because of fear? Is it a shelter, the shelter of Shmuel, who lives in Ramah? Either way, Shaul is upset, overwrought, he feels like he's been abandoned, and into that steps Doeg, to take advantage of Shaul's weakness. Pasuk text, sentence 9. Vayan Doeg ha'adomi, Doeg of Edom, we've talked about that, declared, V'hu nitzav al avdei Shaul. He was the one who was over the servants of Shaul. There's another way you could read that, but I'm reading it that way right now. Vayomar, and he said, Ra'isi es ben Yishai. You know, I saw the son of Yishai. Notice he adopts the style of Shaul, right? Ben Yishai. Banoved, he came to know. El Achimelech ben Achituv. He came to Achimelech, son of Achituv. And he inquired of God. Right? That's that inquiry that we talked about. Vitzedana samlo. And Achimelech gave him food. Ve'ez cherev Goliath haplishti nasamlo. And he gave him the sword of Goliath. That is Doeg's message. Before we go any further into the results of this, Doeg is described, first of all, as Nitzav al Avdei Shaul. So almost every commentator here, and I believe probably your translations as well, render that as he's in charge of all of Shaul's people. right? That's the way all of them read it. Mitzudat David, Rabbi David Altshuler, very rarely says something that doesn't go with everybody else. But here suddenly he throws in that it means he was standing next to the servants of Shaul. No idea why he says that, except maybe because the Gemara talks about him being part of the Sanhedrin. So maybe you want to say, like, he's not in charge of, I don't know where that came from. I don't know. But in any case, that's not the focus right now. The focus is Doeg's speech. What do you see here in Doeg's speech that catches your eye in terms of what he's saying about the interaction between David and Achimelech? So just sentences 9 and 10. What catches your eye here? Yes, Susan.
He's making Achimelech the aggressive, the provider.
Yeah, how?
Oh, sure, I'll give you a food. Oh, sure, I'll give you a sword and all of it. And that's not how it went.
Good. So number one, he, and this is, I think, what you're saying, Susan, he omits David's requests. Right? David showed up there, and Achimelech said, here's food and a weapon.
He makes it sound like Achimelech was in with David. Like,
yeah. That's number one. He omits any sort of request. He omits saying that David asked for any weapon. He omits saying that David asked He omits saying that David would have taken any weapon. That's also not here.
But also David said the most important thing. David said, I'm here on Shaul's.
He omits anything that could exonerate Achimelech. Right? So that's all of a piece here. Add in a note that Abarbanel picks up on that's very sharp. Does he say David went to the Mishkan? No. It says he went to Achimelech. Personally. Right? It sounds like there is some kind of plot that is going on here. He doesn't mention anything about it being in the Mishkan at all. It's very interesting. He also mixes up the order of events. Look at his list of the assistance that was given to David. He puts the request of God first, which we didn't have explicitly in the previous chapter. We only had it hinted at in between the food and the weapon. If it happened at all, it was after the food. He switches the order. There's something there, Malbim says. This isn't random that he does that. I'll add in one more note before we see Abarbanel. Malbim points you to Tehillim chapter 52. For chapter 52, sentence 2. I gave you the reference in source number 10. This is a perek which begins right off the bat. Lametzeach maskila David bivo doeg ha'adomi. When Doeg of Edom came, Vayagev leShaul, and he told Shaul Vayomer lo, and he said to him, Bad David el beis Achimelech. David came to the house of Achimelech, says the Malbim. He went to the Mishkan, not the house of Achimelech. But that's the point. He's trying to indict Achimelech. This is really, really important.
Why?
That's where I want to go with it. That's why we're here. Take a look at source number 11. Look at how Abarbanel parses Doeg's words. He says, oh, I forgot. I put the Tehillim 52 in source 15. You could have just looked down there. Sorry, I forgot I did that. My bad. But take a look at source number 11 now, Abarbanel. V'hine b'dvarim ha'ele haya me'roa levavo. These words were from the evil of his heart, of Doeg's heart. It's already been told here that Achimelech didn't know what David was doing. That he was all worried when David showed up alone, right? He thought, where are your aides and all of that? David told him, I'm going on the king's orders with great secrecy. And he says, without a doubt, Abarbanel says, without a doubt, Doeg knows all of that. He saw the gift of the bread. He saw the sword. He had to have been close enough to hear the conversation. V'lachein hayami pisho she'amar hadvarim hamazikim mimashen asanach yimelech leDavid. V'lo zachar mashenemar sham beinehem shukfiya emes hisnatz luz gadol achimelech. He says, that's the sin of Doeg. He says all of these terrible things about what Achimelech gave to David, without ever mentioning the other piece of it, which is Achimelech's alibi. That he never puts out there. So as Ricky asked, we're going to need to understand better why he does this. But it's no doubt he is trying to make it sound like David and Achimelech are plotting against Shaul. Not only that, now go back to Malbim, who says that the inquiry of the ephod happened first, right? Why does he do that? Says the Malbim. He says, the idea here is that Doeg wants to claim that first David actually went to Achimelech's house, like it says in Tehillim. And that there they had some conversation and I was in the Mishkan, so I didn't know what that conversation was. They didn't arrive at the Mishkan until time to inquire of the ephod. So he's explaining, number one, why the Kohen, this is all Malbim, or Abarbanel, I forget, but I think it was Malbim. No, it's Malbim. He's explaining why Achimelech would have given David the food and weapon despite Doeg's presence. Meaning, if you really think they're conspiring, why did he do it in front of Doeg? Doesn't that show that Achimelech didn't think this was a conspiracy? So his answer is no, he had no choice, because he had to be in the Mishkan for the consultation with the ephod. And number two, he says, their conversation first was the conversation in the house, like I said, and that the Kohen knew what David was doing, and he understood it from the conversation, from the question that was asked of the ephod. When David asks the ephod, what's going to be? Am I going to succeed? He says, he asked very specific things about what he was doing. And the Kohen heard it. And the Kohen gave David the food and the weapon. This is totally a plot against you. That's the way that Doeg paints it. It's a plot. Now, where we're going to have to go next week is the question that Ricky asked, which is, what does Doeg have in for Nov? Why does he want to bring down Nov? He could have just as well talked about David taking the holy bread from the Mishkan. He could have done whatever he wanted to David without dragging Achimelech through the mud. So that's what we're going to need to ask is, what is this about Nov and what is this about Doeg? And we're going to give a whole bunch of answers. We're not giving one answer to this one. This is a big question. Okay?
Next week, God willing, I'll be in Chicago on Thursday, so I'll have to listen to you. So
they do have internet in Chicago.
Sorry?
They have internet
in
Chicago.
Yes, they do. And I can't wait to hear the